You're listening to Mentoring Developers, episode number one.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, in this episode, we'll be talking to Matt Darby. Matt is a very well-known figure in the Columbus Ruby community. He runs the Columbus Ruby Brigade Group, which is a very helpful group for newbies and experienced people alike. And he's been a mentor, and he works for a fantastic company, and he has a lot of stories to share. So I really wanted him to be on this show, and I asked him to give me his bio, so that's what he gave me. Hi, my name is Matt Darby. I've developed on the web for 17 years. I can configure pools of servers, architect and develop the applications on those servers, and make it all look good and run. I have a master's degree in computer science, and I lead the Columbus Ruby Brigade. I've launched projects for folks from Rackspace, AT&T, Sprint, Living Social, and SEO Moz to local engineering and consulting firms. Looks like he's got tons of experience, and I know that he's a great person for our audience to know, and I'm really looking forward to digging into the show. So, without further ado, here's Matt Darby. All right, we have Matt Darby with us. Matt, would you like to introduce yourself? Who is Matt Darby?
That's a great question. Matt Darby. I live in Columbus, Ohio. Basically, I'm a programming nerd. My language of choice is Ruby. I've been using Ruby in the Rails stack for probably 7-8 years now. I run the Columbus Ruby Brigade happily. I believe I just celebrated my 4th year with them. See, I'm a professor at Franklin University, and I work at Rackspace. So, pretty busy nerd.
Yeah, so looks like you wear a lot of hats, and I know that you have come across a lot of people who are starting out, maybe learning Ruby through Columbus Ruby Brigade, and I know that you are somebody that who has some experience mentoring developers. Is that true?
Oh yes, absolutely. From my teaching at Franklin and also through CRB and other, you know, community hack nights, I try to lead people to the well.
That's awesome. So for somebody who is just starting out, is trying to see, well, how do I start? And then I think that your experiences, because I think they're a little bit unorthodox. You didn't get into programming the way maybe some other people might, like myself.
Sure.
Because we went to college and I was somebody that maybe my experiences were different from yours. So I would like to know if you remember your first encounter with programming. How did you discover the world of software development?
Actually, it was through just writing regular web pages. I got my first computer in 1998. I was 18 years old and just figured, well, you know, this seems kind of fun. I should figure out how to write it, and basically just did right-click view source and kind of just jumped on it from there on out. I was writing web pages, you know, pretty quickly after that. It was back in the days of, you know, NBSP spacing and table layouts and all that, you know, animated GIF stuff. So I just really started monkeying around then. The first professional thing was with an engineering firm, and that was after college. So it actually took a fair amount of time to get into that job, and basically, you know, people always ask how I got started and how I got my foot in the door, and I always just kind of say this engineering firm found me. There was no trick. It was basically 6 months after graduation, little bites here and there, and then out of nowhere, it luckily just happened for me. So that was my, you know, the first day-to-day, full-time kind of, you know, cubicle kind of job.
So you started with, what programming language did you use to start with?
The HTML was the first one, if you kind of consider that a language. Then I, of course, sampled or, you know, dabbled around in JavaScript. The first language I really used was pretty much PHP. I used that for 7 or 8 years. You know, liked it. I thought everything was great. I basically started writing larger applications that, you know, really needed some type of framework or management to it. So PHP started to kind of fall apart for me a little bit. Then I ran into KPHP, and, you know, I wrote an app in that, and it's kind of like Rails, and I kept hearing about Rails, and Rails does it this way. So I switched over, you know, I really just switched over to Rails that day, and I've been writing it ever since. Never looked back.
Yeah, that's I've heard that from many people. Rails has that effect on people. But I wanted to know about your choices. For example, you decided to do PHP, but your goal was not to learn a programming language just for the sake of it. You were trying to accomplish a goal. Were you trying to build certain websites that you thought, well, I can't just use HTML. I need something else, but I need PHP specifically because it was solving a problem for you, or were you just interested in learning languages?
PHP was the simplest path that I could find between basically, you know, where everyone pretty much starts off with. You have an HTML form, like a contact me kind of thing, and you need some type of, you know, processor to actually send the email. PHP just seemed the easiest to me because it's really just, you know, a script, essentially. It's just a big kind of shotgun blast of functions. And you know, drop them in the order that you need. So I did that, and that was really the choice. I mean, Rails and Sinatra and Ruby was not even, you know, on the map at all at this point.
Nice.
Easiest way.
Yeah. So I would understand from it that you didn't study computer programming in a formal environment, or did you do it after you learned it, then you went back to college and studied computer science?
Sure. I actually learned it, and then I went to college. So I you know, learned it, or I got my first computer when I was 18, like I said. Then I took a couple of years off, just monkeying around, and the monkeying around was basically with computers. So I pretty much taught myself at least a very solid foothold, enough to, you know, run some apps for friends and local mom-and-pop shop kind of things. So then I went to college. I actually went to DeVry here in Columbus in 2000. So that definitely helped sharpen, you know, my skills. And then actually I have a master's of computer science from Franklin here in town as well. So a fair amount of computer science training, but yeah, I definitely, you know, bootstrapped myself, I like to think.
So you were pretty good at programming by that time. You weren't really, maybe you were able to perhaps, you know, get hired as a programmer, but you probably didn't have the fundamentals. You thought that education will give you some credibility and some fundamentals, so you'll be more productive and more marketable. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. You know, colleges, I mean, especially when you're trying to get your foot in the door, I mean, especially past HR, which is what that really means. HR really stands for those degrees in the computer science field, or at least they did when, or at least I felt they did when I was going in and you know, and starting my career. I don't necessarily think that colleges, you know, college courses or degrees are necessary for computer programming at all. You can teach yourself it, you know, if you have that kind of focus, you know what I mean? Long-term focus. So, I've been the professor, I've been the student, I've been the self-learner. I tend to prefer self-learning.
So you think that it's worth it? This is the question that I'm trying to get at. Is you were on both sides of the equation. You worked before getting an education in computer science, and then after that, you got the degrees and you continued to work. Hindsight, honestly, tell me if you think it was worth the degrees, maybe the master's degree. You think that was definitely added something to you? Is it more valuable to have the degree?
Neither of my degrees per se are valuable. You know, a computer information systems undergrad, computer science grad. They look really good on a resume. Outside of that, they've really earned me nothing. They're really just kind of representations of the work and the knowledge that you've gained. But you can also get that instead of paying somebody for a piece of paper. You can do that by doing community work too. That's kind of the nasty little secret. One I couldn't say when I was a professor. It's like, you don't necessarily need to be here, but there, you know, everyone learns in a different way. Or, you know, there's major camps, right? Some people can have the focus and do it on their own, and some people need a more structured, you know, kind of process through it. So I think it's completely valuable if that's the way you learn. If you're getting a degree just to get a degree, then, you know, I'll take your money.
I think that's a pretty good point. What I noticed was that I spent years and years studying computer science and computer engineering. I was determined. This wasn't something that I thought I needed to get a job. I just wanted to learn so badly that since I was a kid, that's all I wanted to do. I had my sights set on doing this one thing and nothing else. So for me, that was a completely different path. What I realized after getting degree after degree is that the people who didn't have those degrees were doing just fine. They and out of all the things that I learned, I'm using very little. The really depressing part of all this for me was that there were some unnecessary things that you learn in college that are not relevant in the industry. Sure, you can justify that because it's college. You know, it's going to be more research based, you can say. But what surprised me was that I didn't learn some essential skills that are not that hard to teach, but college professors don't teach those skills. Those are necessary to function even as at an entry level. For example, I didn't know how to effectively use a revision control system because we never used it. That was never a thing. And it's so critical. Like you struggle with it initially.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And so some of those things made me realize that I didn't need to get all those degrees. And then what happened, I come across a lot of people, they come to me and they're maybe in community college, maybe they're in high school, they're thinking, I need to get a computer science degree, and I keep telling them, you don't, and they kind of don't believe me. So I thought that we should bring on people, other people more, you know, and we'll just debunk this myth.
Sure. So that's basically like the dilemma I went through when I started teaching. It's like I'm only really showing you like a 10% slice of anything that you need to be aware of. There's gigantic swaths of things that we're not even talking about that you need to know to do anything. Namely, you know, Git, version control, testing is rarely ever taught. It's a shame, you know. But it's also coupled with the fact that the technology moves so quickly. Yeah. And coupled with the fact that professors don't make anywhere near the amount of money that working programmers make.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily dealing with the best programmers out there in industry. You're dealing with a person that can work for a professor's salary. So take that as you may.
That's certainly true. Know. I've had some really awesome professors along the way, and they certainly make a more than average salary, so they would get paid more than a regular professor salary. But certainly if they were so motivated to be on top of technology as we would expect them to be, then they could make two or three times as much money outside of academia. So
yeah, it's interesting. It's a really different world, but it's not one that's really necessary. One of the best programmers I've ever met and had the chance to work with, Leon Gersing, he's got a theater degree. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So that's something that I wanted to bring up, and I'm glad we talked about it. The other thing people struggle with is, well, okay, I understand that I don't need a college degree, but I need to learn things, and then the things that I need to learn, they keep changing and keep morphing, and best practices change, languages change, platforms change. How do I keep up with that? So how do you keep your skills up to date?
Well, that's a very good question. A lot of mistakes and a lot of bumbling. I get thrown onto different projects with different technology stacks on a pretty regular basis. So not only will language change, you know, platform, everything will change. Even on the stack, if I'm just doing web front end or if I'm doing, you know, API work, it can change at any time. So there's really no way to stay on top of it. There really isn't. The real trick is knowing what to search for and kind of having like pointers in your mind, basically, of, I mean, areas to look, places like GitHub and, different like NPM repositories if you're using Node or RubyGems, that kind of thing. It's just, there's a lot to know.
I think that there are two ways of looking at it. I think there are two kinds of people. One is the type of person who says, for example, I will always know the latest thing or the latest trend and all the relevant gems, all the new things that are coming out of Rails, for example, or JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And the other type of person is like, I will work on my project, and when I encounter a problem, at that point, I will search for the best solution that's considered best in, let's say, middle of 2015. What's considered best today? Well, obviously, next year it might be something a little different, but I will learn as I need it. But if I don't need it, I won't actually go out and what's the new version of Rails and all the different features of it. What do you think? Which one do you follow?
Oh, I'm definitely the lazy loaded version. I'll look stuff up when I need it. I don't know if it's where I'm at in my career. It's that I tend to be a little bit more lazy about it. Things move so quickly, and by the time you learn it, they're probably going to change, or it's irrelevant, or the project will shift. It's almost like a fool's errand to try to stay on top of everything. So I tend to just kind of lay back and, understand the core fundamentals. And if I need a little bit of glue here or there, or, if I need a better suggestion, I'll go that route. But there's just so much stuff. This new stack I'm working on, I think I listed it out. I think there's 9 new technologies that I've never even used on this one project.
Oh, wow.
So, just to read it, just to be up on it, I would be out of time on this project. So you kind of just got to go in there and fight and read and hit refresh a whole bunch of times. So
your skills, essentially what you're saying is that you're never going to know perfectly. You're never going to be somebody who knows Rails 4.x perfectly. You should know that you're not going to know everything. Just know that you can find out when you need to.
The biggest thing that, for new programmers that I see is that they're afraid, right? They're afraid to not know an answer because they're kind of like stuck in interview mode.
Yeah.
Most programmers, you ask them, ask them a question, they'll be like, huh? it's not like this stuff isn't always necessarily front loaded, like right at your mind.
Hard
to say.
Yeah, so that's a lesson to learn for everybody here, is that don't be overawed. Everybody is overawed. As if you try to learn everything, you're just not going to learn anything. So I think keep a focus on what you need to learn today, and have this confidence that when the time comes you need to learn something new and you need it for your project, you will do it. So
yeah, you just have to learn to trust yourself and just know that if it's dropped in, you can figure it out.
Yeah, and that comes from experience, which you don't have if you're just starting out, but just have faith.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, it's part of the catch-22. Yeah.
So I want to ask you how you got your first job as a software engineer. I think you kind of alluded to that. Can you revisit that a little bit?
Sure.
So think about it. Let's pretend that I am somebody who just graduated college and I'm trying to see how do I get my first job. So I want to see how you got your first job.
Sure. The first job that I got, like I mentioned earlier, they actually found me. The things that I was trying at the time was really nothing, right? It was resumes, sending out, like cold calls. Monster.com was big at that point. And I never got any traction. I just never did. This company found me. I don't even really recall how. They just kind of came out of nowhere. And I ended up actually working with them for 7 years. I still work with them to this day through like certain contracts and stuff. So, but the big advice thing that what I did wrong was that I didn't get out there personally, right? I wasn't at community events. I wasn't at conferences. I wasn't at user groups saying, "Hi, I'm Matt Darby. Nice to meet you." I was just sending PDFs through email to HR departments. And I just found that it gets me very, very little traffic. You know, knowing people and people knowing you is a great way to network and a great way to get your foot in the door. Certainly over, you know, the HR word filters.
Yeah.
Especially when you're starting, you know what I mean? So you have to find someone that is willing to take a chance on you.
Yeah.
So that really implies like a personal connection. You know, you have to impress them. You know, they have to see that you really want it. And more often than not, if people see that, they'll completely take you under your wing, mentor you, you know, anything. You got to show up and you got to want it. You can't just mail it in. So that's where I failed. but they found
me. Yeah, but luck had, you know, you had luck on your side. But you don't need luck, because what you can do is you can stack odds in your favor as a new developer. What you need to do is show people that you're different. You're not curious. You're actually serious about this. And you show up, and people like to work with you. And we know, as senior developers, we understand that this is not rocket science. You don't need a whole lot more than motivation. If you have motivation, you will make it to a certain level. And all you need to do is...
Motivation, focus. Yep.
Absolutely. And I think that because it's not really taught, like you can't teach this type of stuff. It's something that we have to raise awareness of, I think, so that when people are thinking about the, you know, starting a career in software development, the first thing they think about is networking. First thing they think about is going to a meetup or going to a conference. Instead of what you normally see is that more experienced people go to meetups and conferences.
Exactly. The hard part about teaching some of this stuff is that that programming is a little bit art and a little bit science. So, I mean, you can just kind of throw out like examples to people and they can regurgitate or figure it out. But when things are kind of put in concert with each other, that's really the hard part. That's really what kind of gets you over from like I don't want to say a newbie, but a newbie to, you know, a more seasoned developer. So you have to learn how to paint at some point by yourself. So
in your experience, do you think software development shops create a nurturing and enabling environment for new developers to grow and prosper? Let me give you my perspective first. In my view, this is lacking because people don't see new developers or new recruits as, you know, things, assets that you invest in. They're basically thrown in the deep end, and it's just expected that they will just do fine, or they will be kicked out and you'll get somebody else. What do you think?
Yep, sink or swim, yeah. I've worked at several shops that you know, brought in juniors and or apprentices and or interns, and it's actually like a really, really difficult problem. You want to bring people in. I mean, you want to bring the right people in. I mean, they have to be focused. They have to be motivated. You have to have the right type of mindset and talents, right? It's very important. And once you kind of make it through there and you get inside, people don't have a lot of time. And that's the trouble, right? There's a lot of nurturing that is expected from the person and expected to be given to the person. But when, you know, time comes and you have to pay the bills, and project work almost always comes before, you know, mentoring or teaching, unfortunately. I've seen a lot of really, really, you know, motivated, hardy people kind of fail at it, myself included. It's a very difficult thing without kind of being a permanent overseer. So it's almost like they need to have the apprentice journeyman kind of pattern instead of just, you know, here's our interns, you know, give them something to do. But that also has to come from the perspective from the business that it's going to slow down your work. So a lot of businesses try to promote the, you know, bring in the people, but it's like, you know, that's on top of your daily duties as well. So I think that's where a lot of places fall apart. I don't know of any place that is doing it incredibly well. Not to say that there isn't some that are doing it fine.
I think obviously, there's going to be a spectrum. I've seen places where there's no mentorship of any kind, and there's some, they're official. They try at least to have a program, and they lead people through that program. But I think the key for me is that the companies, either they treat their new employees or fresh graduates and junior people as assets, long-term assets, or they don't see them as assets. If you see them as assets, then you'll definitely invest in them. Definitely the new developers, the people who have very little experience, they also charge less money. So there's more profit, right? And I think there's a lot of people hire new developers because, you know, you get a lot of out of them. If they're good, even if 50% are good, you make up your losses with the other 50%, I think.
I don't see a lot of companies treating younger, education-wise or experience-wise programmers as assets. I think they're not treating them as assets, or they are treating them as assets. They aren't investing in them. They're just using them to fill in some holes in their staffing. Mm-hmm. But the sad thing is that they probably are aware that a certain percentage of those people are probably going to not either fit in, not like the job, you know, a certain amount have to shake out. So after that shakeout kind of occurs, then you typically see a little bit of more, education thrown the developer's way. But again, that doesn't necessarily help the first stage, right? The very first hard part. Anyway, that's my experience. Some companies do. Some people will really throw a lot of time at it to varying degrees of success. Coming up with a teaching plan is a very, very difficult thing to do. And no matter how long you've been doing it, there's always holes and stuff you forgot and, just dumb mistakes. And it trips people. It's all very difficult.
It is difficult in an industry. Some other industries, it is very... it is institutionalized in a way that I believe that if I want to be an architect, I will not be put in charge of to architect a bridge as my first project out of college. This will never happen, right? If I am if I'm a physician, I will never be asked to do heart surgery fresh out of college. So I think that this is where our industry is not like the engineering and medical industries, but I think that it's pushing it towards it. My personal opinion is that it's advantageous, and I think it's inevitable. If you don't do that, then you're going to have a lot of people making, well, it's actually happening, there's a lot of really bad software out there that people have no idea what they're doing.
There is?
Yeah. Okay.
There is. I always tell my students, like, this is like the Wild West. I mean, this is back in the Edison and Tesla days. We're all just trying to figure it out, right?
Yeah.
Right now, and no one's figured it out yet. So, like, things like standard, software engineer, I think, like that's great, but, like, gravity has never changed, right? The weight of steel doesn't change. Yeah. Like, with code, it's different every day. Like, how do you get certified? What makes you a senior? You know what I mean? That track of thought.
That is true. So, if there is somebody who is curious about software development, maybe they've never actually done any coding, but they're feeling a little intimidated because it looks complicated. How will you rate software development as a career for them, as opposed to accounting or something else?
Sure. Software is interesting because a lot of times you have to defend your opinions and your actions in terms of your code. I'm sure other industries are, of course, like that. But again, with more of the lockdown professions like accounting or engineering, there typically is one right answer. With code, there isn't, like by law.
Yeah.
So it's the whole getting over yourself and getting over being okay with the idea that you're going to be learning continuously. And if you don't, you start to fall behind. That's probably the big delineator. I don't think it takes a genius to write software. Not at all. It just takes focus and the ability to deal with, things not working all the time and it being outside of your control or, outside of your current understanding of something. So that's it. It's the mental fortitude.
Do you think that can be taught or that is people are born with it? This idea that you're just going to keep trying and keep banging your head until you get it.
I'd say born, but I hope it can be taught or learned anyway, right? But yeah, I don't think it can be taught. I think it can be learned. That might be a good way to phrase it. You know, I was never a good student. I never studied. I barely even went to high school. Now I can sit down and, you know, focus on computer program for 12 to 14 hours a day on end. So somewhere I learned how to, you know, deal with all the bumps that programming brings you.
Okay. So if you could start over, what would you do differently as a new developer?
Sure. I would definitely go to user groups. I would definitely ask questions. I would definitely get up there, and even if I look dumb speaking, or I look, you know, I feel I look dumb asking a question, the sooner you get over yourself, the quicker you are going to skyrocket in your career. So there's no dumb questions. Just find something that you enjoy, find a project, find an angle, and just keep working at it, and just ask questions, bug people. And just know that all other programmers are just people. I mean, it's just because they can, you know, do some magic incantations that you don't understand yet doesn't, you know, it's just a learned skill. So don't be afraid and talk to people. It'll get you across everything. And especially your foot in the door. So if they have, you know, some companies have like drink ups or meetups or open hack nights, something like that, just go and introduce yourself. That's the best thing you can do.
I think that's great advice. So now in the last section of this interview, I am going to ask you a few questions. Just give me quick answers, 30 seconds, 1 minute answers.
Sure.
So do you think it's important for new developers to promote themselves? Because one thing is, there's one thing to know coding. The other one is to market yourself so people know that you know certain things. So what do you think about that?
Absolutely. Marketing is huge. It goes back to the user groups and talking to people. You can know everything in the world, but if no one knows you or knows that you know it, it doesn't mean anything. You've got to promote yourself. And you don't have to do it in a sleazy way. You can do it in like a user group and make friends. And it's still the same thing. Just talk to people.
Yeah. So user group is a good way of doing it. Is there anything else that you'd recommend? Perhaps writing blog posts?
Sure, blog posts. Any way to get yourself out there. Blog posts, conferences. Some people just have like open like Google office hours kind of thing. They get together and they'll hack. There's even other avenues. Your programming. Here in Columbus, we have Pear Columbus. And then there's another really awesome web app. I'm forgetting the name of it now. That one of my friends works on. I'm forgetting. Yeah, I'll send. Forget the name. It's pretty popular, but it's a way to pair program basically, like asynchronously. But yes, getting yourself out there any way possible is good.
So I know that you have mentored people. Have you been mentored yourself by somebody?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I had a professor at DeVry, my undergrad days. I had him for C++. I couldn't understand it. I tried so hard, and I got an F in his class. So I go to him, you know, after I get my final grade, I'm like, what can I do? And he looks at me, and he goes, take it again. I'm like, all right, let's do it. So I figured I already went through that curriculum once. Mm-hmm. I'll know what's going on. Well, he changed the entire curriculum intentionally. So anyway, after he did that to me, and I, you know, killed myself and got a C, he became my mentor of sorts, basically, and that was in 2000. And right now, he was the reason that I became a professor at Franklin. So again, knowing people is just so intensely key. If he didn't know that I was, you know, I tweeted that I was teaching at Grange Insurance, that's self-promotion. He saw that, and since he knew that I was teaching and liked it, he offered me a professorship because he knew me. So all people you know, all promotion.
This is awesome. So we need to learn our skills, and we need to promote ourselves, and just keep rinse and repeat until you get it.
Exactly. Yeah, and you're going to get bruised. Every single time you promote yourself, someone's going to laugh at you, or you're going to fail, or you're going to get punched metaphorically in some way. The key is getting over that. It's always going to happen. It's almost like being a stand-up comedian. You know, yeah. I mean, you're going to get booed sometimes. Just have a thick skin and just keep beating away at it, and you will absolutely make it.
Awesome. Okay, so do you listen to any podcasts? Do you recommend any?
Unfortunately, I'm not a huge podcast guy. I tend to be programming pretty, you know, much constantly throughout the day. And so, you know, two sides of my brain, I need them both on programming. Yeah,
that's fine. And what about screencasts or videos, any instructional videos that you watch?
Ruby has a really great one run by Ryan Bates, Railscast. That's been around for years. That'll get you, you know, that has a great backlog of everything, everything Rails. Another one I follow is NS Screencasts. That's for Objective-C, iOS, Cocoa development. There was another one that I followed for, it's called Elixir Sips. That's it.
Nice.
And that's just, it's basically like a Railscast for Elixir. So that's getting pretty hot. I'm trying to keep that on my radar. So
awesome. And do you recommend any blogs?
Blogs?
You don't have time to read them, right?
Is usually... Yeah, I know, right? Everyone is supposed to write them. Everyone reads them, but no one writes them. ThoughtBot has a really good blog. Our one at Rackspace, I like to feel, is a very good blog. It's just developer.rackspace.com. We put all, you know, far-flung technical resources out there along with documentation and all that fun stuff. So, yeah.
Nice. So, last three questions. What's the best advice you can give to software shops that are looking to hire new developers? What can they do?
They need to have someone intentionally set aside in terms of hours, like business hours, every single day, or no, every single day that they have set aside that they can actually mentor these people, and that their normal like project workload is reduced accordingly. They need someone there. They need someone consistent. Someone they trust, because, again, this is more psychology. We're trying to get these people to ask the dumb questions. So they'll learn. That's a big stumbling block. And in order to do that, they have to have someone they trust around. That's my thought.
Absolutely. And what's the best advice you can give to new and aspiring developers?
Keep your head up. Programming is a tough journey. It really is. Once you learn something, you go, oh, well, that was simple. But you tend to really quickly forget the pain that you went through to learn that. So unfortunately, that's the first part. That's the first mountain you have to climb. And you kind of have to do it blindly, because you don't really, you know, you haven't seen what's over on the other side of the mountain yet. You're just kind of going, God, I hope I get that big paycheck or that awesome job with that cool company. You just really have to run on faith a lot in the beginning, especially. So just, you know, like I said, keep your head down, keep working, promote yourself, and make sure people know who you are. It doesn't have to be, you know, networking sliminess with business cards and stuff. Just go have a beer with somebody. It's always worthwhile.
So what's the best way of getting in touch with you? Anything going on, any projects, anything you'd like to promote, and what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Sure. Like I said, I work at Rackspace. So I work on the Fog Gem primarily, and that's basically a multi-tenant cloud library that allows Ruby applications or Rails applications to easily connect to Rackspace or AWS or any cloud provider. I also oversee Knife Rackspace, if you're into the Chef world, just another configuration wrapper that allows Rackspace and Chef to play nicely together. Outside of that, my website's just matt-darby.com, and it's got links to all, basically all my stuff.
Fantastic. I think it was awesome talking to you, and I hope that you, Matt, you liked this conversation, and I'm sure that people are gonna love this this show. And with that, I'd like to say good night to you, and we'll talk to you later.
Sweet, absolutely.
Thanks, Matt.
All right,
talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
MentoringDevelopers.com.
See ya.